Welcome to Courageous Conversations. I'm your host and author of the book Freedom from Shame. I created this podcast to discuss one of the most sensitive and challenging topics, finding freedom from the impact of sexual abuse. In this podcast, we'll bring to light the stories of survivors, share valuable insights from experts, we'll hear from brave people who are willing to take responsibility for the harm they've caused, and we'll explore various aspects of healing and recovery. Together, we'll navigate the complexities of overcoming trauma and finding the strength to reclaim our lives. So whether you're a survivor seeking solace, an ally eager to understand, or someone simply looking for inspiration, you've come to the right place. You found a safe place where courage meets compassion and where the journey towards healing takes flight. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Layla Reyes, and just a little content warning. As I mentioned here, I talk about childhood sexual abuse, and the content may trigger some memories or bring up difficult feelings. This podcast is for informational purposes only, so please take care of yourself. Get support from a professional if you experience any emotional distress. And so welcome to episode 8. Today's topic is crucial. It's about recognizing and preventing childhood sexual abuse. So I want to mention again that I'm not a doctor or a therapist, and I do hold a master's in social work, and I'm a coach committed to helping individuals end the impact of childhood sexual abuse on their adult lives and relationships. In today's episode, we're going to cover key points about recognizing and preventing childhood sexual abuse. So we're going to discuss risk factors, how to recognize abuse, and a very wonderful booklet written by Dr. Tony Cavanaugh. And so I'm going to share some general risk factors so you can be better informed about what to look for and when to get help if you need it. I'm going to share a little bit about how to identify the signs of abuse and how to differentiate between normal and concerning sexual behavior in children. I'm going to share some information on how to recognize if sexual abuse is happening and also what's normal and healthy behavior in children. So you don't freak out if you see this in your children's behavior. And one of the resources that I'm going to share with you is from Dr. Tony Cavanaugh, who created an essential resource on children's sexual behavior. It is called, let me pull the booklet here, it's called Understanding Children's Sexual Behaviors, What's Natural and Healthy. And so I will share where you can get that as well a little bit later. Let's get started with the risk factors. I've read quite a few scientific articles on risk factors over the years and preparing for today's episode. There's actually a bit of conflicting research, so I'll share what I believe to be some of the most relevant and important factors to pay attention to, but please, please, please do your own research. There's a lot out there, and you might have to sift through it a little bit. One of the limitations of the available research is that it only includes known cases of childhood sexual abuse, right? We can't include what we don't know, what hasn't been reported. So this requires people to reveal that they've been abused, and not everyone does that. Not everyone does that when it happens, and sometimes people may do that later on in life or never at all. My personal and professional experience is that I'm often the first point of contact for survivors of abuse. So the people, my clients who come to me reveal that they've been abused, do so after I reveal my own abuse history. My instinct tells me that this is more common than not to keep this to oneself, to keep it a secret, which leads me to the conclusion, logical conclusion, that we're missing a big chunk of data on these people who have never told anyone of their abuse before telling me. So they're not included in the scientific data. How do we know? Also, the research on perpetrators of childhood sexual abuse is really limited. Perpetrators may never be confronted, and if they are, then they're more likely to deny the abuse from happening as a simple survival strategy. For example, a colleague of mine, Jeremy Indica, creator of a podcast and YouTube channel, he has a channel called Something to Say. And he confronted his abuser, and instead of the person who abused him taking responsibility, he had Jeremy arrested for harassment. So the person who abused Jeremy is not included in the research, and so there's really no way to know his history or what compelled him to abuse Jeremy. So that's just one example. There are many, many examples, and the more that we talk to each other, the more that we share our experience, the more we're going to find what is actually, you know, what the information that's out there. So it's really, my point is that it's not an isolated incident, and we do not have enough information on the vast majority of abusers, someone who causes harm, to make anything more than an educated guess about who they are and what leads them to abuse. And so I'm going to make educated guesses as well as share some hard evidence to guide you in protecting children. And I want to say that the majority of my research, well, I'd say in regards to people who cause harm, is really around the family members. So I haven't done research on outside of that. Another limitation of the research is that ethics really prevents experimental research on sexual abuse. It makes total sense. So we're stuck with stereotypes and myths and social constructs around abuse. But the more that we share our experiences, the more we're going to know how to stop it. So I'm really here to invite you to share your stories as well. And I have some places for you to do that, and to really encourage you to speak up and share your experience if you have any experience with being sexually abused, or maybe even know someone who has, or maybe you're somebody who has sexually abused and really wants to stop or wants to take responsibility but don't know how. So that's kind of a bigger picture there. Let's look at some general risk factors for potential abuse, and then we'll talk about the symptoms that indicate a child may have experienced abuse. So when we're looking at victims of abuse, or the majority of abuse, I would say up to 81% happens to children under the age of 12. This is what the research is showing. And a big risk factor is if the child was abused, then they're at a higher risk to be abused again. And there's some other ways where people are at a higher risk. If they're neglected, their risk doubles. And you know, unfortunately, if they're in a one-parent household, their risk is higher. And if there is domestic violence in the home, risk is higher. Older children are at a higher risk if they're in a father-only family. And the lower the family income and the more dangerous the community someone grows up in, the higher the risk. Research shows that girls are more likely to be sexually abused than boys. However, I'm hesitant to agree with this. In my experience, boys tend to bury their secret in a different way than girls do. And much it's difficult for anyone to talk about being abused. But it seems, from my experience, even more difficult for boys or men once they've grown to share what the that they've been abused. So let's look at another just a piece of research is that the vast majority of sexually abused children do not go on to abuse other people. They don't go on to offend. But I think we don't have the research on offenders to know their history. So how could we actually know that if we're not, like, how could that be really hard evidence if we don't have access to offenders? How do we know what their history is? They're not talking about it. So I don't know how to accurately assess this. However, children who have parents with a history of childhood sexual abuse are 10 times more likely to be sexually abused than children with parents without such a history. So let me say that one more time, because this, I think, is a little bit harder evidence, so to speak. Children who have parents with a history of childhood sexual abuse are 10 times more likely to be sexually abused than children with parents without such a history. So, you know, if you've been sexually abused and you have children or you're planning on having children, it would be a really good idea to work through that experience and learn everything that you can to prevent abuse from happening to your children when you have them. So let's take a look at offenders as well. In regards to someone who abuses, the risk factors include the abuser being emotionally needy. So this is an interesting aspect that I uncovered. Abusers tend to have less education than non-abusers and are more likely to be unemployed or from a blue-collar background. Now, again, we're back to, this is from people who are known offenders, right? Research on adolescent offenders shows that sexually abused male youth were much more likely to have committed sexual offenses if they had been abused by both men and women, and that if the perpetrator was related to him and the perpetrator used violence, then the abuse took place over several years and included penetrative sexual acts. So there's a lot of factors here to consider around abuse. Of course, 100%, these risk factors don't guarantee abuse will occur, nor do their absence ensure safety. Really, what I'm talking about here is awareness and vigilance being a key to preventing abuse or intercepting it. So your willingness to remain aware and present is one of the best ways to intercept or prevent abuse from happening in the first place. So really, education is key, especially with this difficult and emotionally charged topic of childhood sexual abuse. Let's take a look now at some of the symptoms, because identifying the symptoms of abuse is absolutely crucial. Symptoms can vary based on age, but they often include predominant symptoms such as nightmares or depression, withdrawn behavior, neurotic mental illness, aggression, and regressive behavior. Preschool children tend to have a lot of anxiety and exhibit inappropriate sexual behavior. And adolescents tend to engage in illegal activity, substance abuse, and self-injurious behaviors. They tend to have more somatic complaints. They may run away or become suicidal. Children who have been abused tend to perform below grade level in reading, math, science, and social studies. And they're more likely to be enrolled in special education. They tend to get more unsatisfactory classroom behavior ratings from their teachers. And young girl survivors tend to have more behavior problems than boys their same age, but teenage boys tend to start showing behavior problems while in their teens. So the main point of reason for bringing these out is not to say if you see these things that abuse has happened. This is really important. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is pay attention to these signs. Trust your instincts. And if something feels off, it's worth investigating. It's worth investigating. All right, so let's just take a look at dispelling some common myths. Most people believe that only men abuse. It's always a shock. You know, it's like, oh, men abuse, and a shock if a woman abuses. So while the research says that men are statistically more likely to be abusers, it's really important that we know and recognize and understand that not all abusers are men. And really, if you have that belief that women don't abuse, then if these signs of abuse are present, you're probably going to be in a bit of denial. You're not going to look at a woman who might be an abuser because of your belief system. So I just want to open that up and say, if there are signs, if there are some, you know, concerning behaviors, to really be willing to look at everything. And I'll have an episode where we explore this more in detail. But for now, just know that not all abusers are men, and be willing to see. Another myth that took root in the 80s was stranger danger. And I explored this topic in more detail in a previous episode to dispel this myth and talk about where it comes from. The most important information here is that abusers are mostly known to the victim, and they're often trusted family members or friends of the family. When we look at the reported statistics from the people who do report, so of all the reports that are made, 58% of offenders are relatives of the victim. 41% is a stepfather, and 28% is a biological mother. So, and that's from the known, like that's more of the hard evidence. You know, we can count that from reported offenses. So just some things to really be aware of. Let's take a look at a few things, a few keys on how to prevent abuse. The first one is, be willing to see it. Don't be in denial. Denial is a powerful barrier to recognizing abuse. And denial comes in many forms and is perfectly, totally understandable why we would want to, or why we would go into denial just automatically. It's natural to want to believe it couldn't happen in your family. But vigilance requires acknowledging uncomfortable possibilities. Nobody wants to know abuse is happening in their home. And it makes sense that someone would minimize abuse if they're seeing it. It would make sense that someone would want to turn the other way, but don't. You know, this denial, and I have another episode on it. You can listen to that. But denial is a protective mechanism that allows someone to attempt to avoid pain or potential pain. And denial can be really connected to our logic. For example, the belief is, I have a good family. And the belief is, abuse doesn't happen in good families. So then the logical conclusion from that is, therefore, abuse can't happen in my family. But if you think this way, and you really believe that, then you won't see abuse if it's happening in your family. And from that perspective, then, you know, it's like you can't go into this belief that, oh, if it happens in my family, if abuse happens in my family, then that means that I don't have a good family. No, we cannot even entertain that. It's more important to be willing to just notice it and not judge the goodness or badness of your family. So now, if you've been abused and you haven't dealt with the abuse, then you might have an unconscious reaction to what you're seeing. And this reaction to concerning behaviors can be either too explosive or too dismissive. Both of those are a problem. Because if you're reacting and you're just, you know, maybe you're reacting to something that you see that's completely and totally innocent, or maybe you're not reacting to something that really needs your attention. And the core tenet here is that you can't stop abuse if you don't see it. You absolutely need to be willing to see what you don't want to see. So to learn more about denial, you can listen to two of my episodes, earlier episodes. One's called No Longer Denying Sexual Abuse, and the other one is Freedom from Denial. I think I might have just changed the names of those. So, but they're about denial. The second key that I really mentioned earlier is about educating yourself. And education is crucial in preventing abuse. To really understand what behaviors are normal and healthy and what behaviors are concerning is absolutely critical. One of the most valuable and easy to read resources that I've come across in my research is in a 42-page booklet written by Dr. Tony Cavanaugh. Dr. Cavanaugh defines natural and healthy childhood sexual behaviors and how to differentiate them from truly concerning behaviors. Now, I've purchased or referred her booklet to everyone I know who has kids or works with kids, including my own grown children. Everyone has one of these booklets in their home. And I want to share some of the highlights of this booklet and why I think it's so valuable. Dr. Cavanaugh's research shows that up to 85% of children engage in some form of sexual behavior before adolescence. 85%. Now, if you've been sexually abused or you see this behavior in your child and you might freak out. But what we want to do is I really get clear on what's normal and healthy. Children's normal and healthy sexual behavior includes looking and touching each other's bodies and exploring gender roles, like when playing house or doctor. One distinction between normal exploration and problematic behavior is whether the exploration is between children of the same age and development, or if there's a gap in age or development. So these are things that would differentiate from normal, healthy behavior and something that is concerning or needs addressing. Dr. Cavanaugh describes many characteristics of the normal sexual behavior children engage in. And if you discover children while engaging in this normal behavior, asking them to stop, they typically stop. That would be normal behavior also, is to stop when you're asked, to not do it again. So this is another thing that you'll find in this booklet. The most important thing that you can do to develop healthy sexual behavior in children is to talk to them. I say that, but I know how difficult it can be to even think about talking to our children about the facts of life. Most of us don't even talk to our partners or haven't had a conversation like this with anyone. And so that's where educating yourself comes into play. If you learn the language and how to talk to your kids at different ages, then it will become quite a bit easier. Dr. Cavanaugh gives some examples and a wonderful list of books that can help you out, so you don't have to do it alone. There are books out there that help you to have that conversation. So her booklet has examples, of potential responses depending on the child's age and characteristics of problematic behaviors. So another aspect of this book that's really helpful is that it contains charts broken down by age that distinguish natural and healthy behavior from concerning behavior and behavior that requires professional help. So I'm really advocating for every household to have this booklet, Educate Yourself. I want to encourage you to get one for yourself, and you can find a link to get Dr. Cavanaugh's booklet at my website at www.leilareyes.com/recommended-reading. And that's Leila Reyes, LEILAREYES.com/recommended-reading. Okay, so the last little key here before we end. It's a little short episode today, but the last key is around getting support. So whether you're a survivor seeking healing for yourself or you're someone looking to prevent abuse, support is essential. So reach out for help, read relevant literature, and stay informed. Prevention begins with education and a willingness to confront uncomfortable truths. So let's work together to protect our children and create a safer future. If you need support, my book, Freedom from Shame, Trauma, Forgiveness, and Healing from Sexual Abuse, is available to guide you through your healing journey. And I want to invite you to feel free to reach out if you want to collaborate or share your story. And you can read more on this particular topic at my website at leilareyes.com and go to the blog and podcast tab at the top. So thank you so much for listening today. And remember, education and awareness are our strongest tools in preventing childhood sexual abuse. Until next time, I'm Leila Reyes, and I'm wishing you all the best and a safe, safe future for our children. As we conclude this episode of Courageous Conversations, I want you to know that your willingness to participate in these conversations makes a difference. Healing is a journey, and you're not alone. If you're in need of support, please reach out and I'll do whatever I can to help. Until next time, this is Leila Reyes, signing off with a commitment to support you in getting free from the impact of sexual abuse.